no matter how good the underlying tech is, if you present the user that's using this as their livelihood and it something breaks or doesn't work or costs them an extra hour to figure out how to do something, they're just going to throw it away and never use it again.
Hi, I'm David, and this is Build to Succeed from Very Good Ventures. Today, we speak with David Chen, head of software services at autonomous ag tech company, Agtonomy. In this episode, we talk about autonomous vehicles like drones and tractors and the importance of making high leverage choices in your technology stack. So without further ado, let's go meet David. Hi, David. Thanks for coming on Build to Succeed.
Hey, David. Great to see you again. A pleasure.
Let's get started with why don't you give us an introduction?
Yeah, I'm David Chen. I'm the head of software services at a company called Agtonomy. We're building autonomous tractors to work in permanent crops, and our mission is to solve the massive labor shortage that's happening in ag today.
Hmm. Autonomous, right? So I was just out in San Francisco, actually saw you a few weeks ago and got my first experience in a Waymo. So you're in the center of autonomy and autonomous vehicles right now. What's the vibe out there with the whole autonomous movement?
It's incredible. You'll see Waymos driving all over the place. And after becoming a user, you realize you never want to ride in a human-operated Uber or Lyft ever again, because they just drive so much better. It's comfortable. You don't get whiplash from terrible drivers, and you don't get your ride canceled because there's traffic. Can't wait till it's everywhere.
It was eye-opening for me personally, because the cars were both more aggressive than I expected them to be somehow. And interestingly enough, I feel like there was one situation where a car pulled over and it was kind of still in our lane a little bit, where even as a human, I was like, are we clear? But it's interesting because it had so much data that it knew it was clear. And we were all like, ooh, that's tight, you know, but it still pushed right through. And so that was pretty cool. And we had a joke because we took a regular Uber, and we were just talking about work, obviously what we do, we build apps and stuff. And the Uber driver like started pitching us his app idea, which is not something that happens in a Waymo. So, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, so your career has spent a lot of time thinking about autonomy, right? And I'd love to just tell us a little bit about your story arc. How did you end up at Agtonomy?
Sure. So growing up, I was exposed to computers very early on, got into programming, learned how to program. And one of my first jobs, this was in the eighth grade, was building a database program for a local company that made inflatable boats. And then from there, got other jobs, doing PHP, web development. And that's kind of what led me down this path. Went to school, did computer science, did my own startups after that. Eventually, I worked at Twitter for a number of years when they were still much smaller. And it was around that time I got really into drones. This was a new thing, right? Quadcopters didn't really exist for the public, at least. It was just something that can hover in place. You can fly it easily, control it through an app. And that really sucked me in. I got into drone racing, building drones. And that's what led me to autonomous drones. And I joined a company called Skycatch, who was building autonomous drone systems to map sites like construction and mining. And it was just really interesting work on what this technology really enabled. And that led me down to other robotics interests. And that ultimately led me to Agtonomy, where we're now building robots for farming and bringing autonomous technology to help with labor shortage, where people just can't hire enough tractor operators.
Wow. I mean, that's an awesome set of experiences and kind of connect the dots there. You mentioned about Skycatch and the drones kind of doing like mapping. Can you get what were you guys doing there? Were you making like 3D maps of these sites?
Yeah, exactly. So for mining, it was open pit mines. Essentially, they dig a giant hole in the ground to extract minerals. And it's constantly changing as they blast and remove materials for processing. They need to know exactly where things are and how much volume of material has been moved. Traditionally, a human goes out there with a GNSS rover and they're measuring point by point and then interpolating that to create a surface. But it's dangerous because you can imagine right after you blast an area, it's unstable, or you can't measure to the very edge of a cliff because it's super dangerous. So you're kind of measuring a couple feet behind and then just projecting that point to give an estimate. So it's not very accurate. What drones allowed us to do was reverse the process, where instead of human going out collecting data point by point, you can send a drone out, map the entire area, generate 3D terrain that's accurate to a few centimeters, and then you can do all the measurements you need on a computer. So that takes a human out of very dangerous environments. It makes the work faster. And getting that data was essential to the operations of these mines. And the surveyor who goes out there to measure it is kind of that bottleneck. Everybody's asking for data. Can you go measure this, measure that, calculate these things? So it's on them. And these mines are in very remote, often very hostile environments. So being out there, just going outdoors in some of these areas could be very tough. And especially in polar regions where temperatures are negative throughout the year and you get maybe a couple hours of sunlight, every second count. And being able to do your work efficiently is all that matters.
Hmm. Wow. So I think a lot of people, when they think of autonomous, they think of autonomous car where you're replacing a human driver. And there's some concerns about jobs and things like that, right? And it's also interesting because you guys at Autonomy are solving that problem because there aren't enough people to do the job. But in this case, it's like autonomy plays a critical role where it's just dangerous for a human operator. And you're not able to even get the level of data, the quality of data you really need. And so the autonomy really helps you in that regard. These sound like really crazy places to go. Like as an engineer developing software, I would imagine it would be quite difficult to like test the things you're doing, given that like a drone has to be in a remote mining place, like flying around. How did you kind of like overcome some of the sort of like actual use cases of these things and learn and improve your products?
Well, what we found is to build products for certain markets, it's not enough just to think about and talk to the people who are going to use it. You really need to live in their shoes to experience what they experience on a day-to-day basis. And for us, that means actually going out to the mine sites, working with them, helping them, training them to use these systems, and then actually experiencing what that process is like. So for me, I spent some time up in the Arctic Circle at a place called Red Dog Mine. It's a super remote mine, but I think a large amount of nickel and lead is mined from this single site that supplies the entire world. So it's very critical for all sorts of production downstream of that. Flying up there, you take an Alaskan airline, it's a special charter that flies to the mine twice a week. They have their own power plant. They have their own runway. Essentially, you fly in, there's a compound where a couple hundred people live and work, and they go on these crazy schedules of 2 weeks on site, 2 weeks off site, pretty much working nonstop in like these insane environments just to mine this material. And every minute of downtime is costs them money. So they need products that just work in any kind of environment.
Wow. And so what are like when you're there and you're in the Arctic Circle and this product you're working on probably normally from your office, right? Committing code. What kind of things were you able to do and learn on site as part of that product development experience?
Yeah, sure. So the things that you don't think about when you're just developing software, because for software, you think about, it loads, it does the right things. But in these environments, you have to think about it's negative 20 outside. So what does it take to open up a kit, take out the drone, set it up, get it ready to fly? Because that actually is challenging because you're wearing gloves. So we wanted to design systems where it was really easy to set it up. You essentially have everything ready to go. You pull it out, power it on, and it's able to do its job. And getting that data is also important. Where do you process that data? In normal world, you can say, all right, just go upload this 10 gigabytes of photos to the cloud, get it processed. But at that mine, their only link to the internet was satellite uplink. So it was very limited bandwidth, which made that completely impossible. So what made our systems work is that we developed solutions to process this data on the edge in the field. So by the time they're done flying, they can load that data from the drone into our edge compute device. And by the time they've driven that 30-minute ride from the bottom of the pit up back to their office, data's ready to use. They can pop it into their computers and get on with the next step.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, it's definitely a more rounded way of thinking about your products. Like, you got to get out there, and it influences the actual software you write and solving some of those complex engineering challenges. So how'd you end up from mining then into ag tech?
Yeah, so I was looking for a change. I'd been at Skycatch for almost 8 years, and a former colleague was at a company called Autonomy, and they were building autonomous tractors. I went out to the founder had a vineyard up in Sonoma. I went and visited them, saw the tractors in action, and it was really exciting. And seeing it do work on its own and being able to be remotely controlled and autonomously drive around in a lot. And for me, it was always finding something that not only was I interested in working on, but also what good does it bring to the world if I contribute my time and energy to making this a successful product? You know, that's something that drove every single decision that I made in life. It's like, is this going to have a bigger impact?
Was there anything specific around these, like, hardware? You know, both of these career experiences you're describing have very heavy hardware angles to what they're doing. And you can contrast that to a lot of software engineers who are building kind of pure software. Like, if you're working at Facebook or something, like, your entire product lives as software, essentially. You're building software that integrates with real things that are flying around or driving around. Was that purposeful, or was that luck, or was there something that just really excites you about the hardware software connection?
I think that was purposeful. You know, ever since I was young, I would love building things. That's always been something I've been interested in. In the early part of my career, I did pure software, building web apps and mobile apps. But once I got sucked into drones, it revived that passion for robotics that I had as a younger, and led me to focus on career choices that involved hardware, because I just think it's so much more interesting when the software that you're building actually interacts with the real world.
And the humans in the world too, right? But that's interesting because you have these autonomous vehicles you're creating, the drones or the tractors. But one of the key things you were describing is still the human element of, like, I got to open this box and put it out there. So I just think that's an interesting thing, where it's this human hardware software interaction. I think a lot of people out there maybe don't have a lot of that experience. Is there unique aspects of, as a software engineer, that you think are fundamentally different when you're developing for this sort of hardware, these interactions like this, as opposed to just a pure map or website or something like that?
Yeah, I think there is some differences, but I think it all comes down to understanding what the user is trying to do. I think a lot of software is built technology first, and then you give someone a product that you come up with. Whereas the products that I've worked on in this robotics realm, it's first understanding what is the traditional workflow that they're doing, what is their steps, and then instead of trying to give them something new, you bring them something that's familiar, but is doing their original task in a much easier or much more streamlined way. So really understanding their day-to-day work is extremely important.
So you worked in two very specific companies, right? And I'm curious if there were any sort of key tech decisions you made at those companies that really stand out, or any sort of, even I'd love to know also even commonalities between those two companies or lessons learned. Maybe at Skycatch, if we go back there, were there things that, like, when you were doing that, when you were working on that, and all the, like, environmental concerns you were thinking about and all the product concerns? I mean, one of the things we're really looking for is, how do you optimize success in these efforts? You know, we have limited time, limited budget. What were some tech decisions you made that you think helped you to be successful as an engineer, maybe, and as a company back then?
Yeah, I think for Skycatch, when we were creating the company, there's a lot of hype around drones, a lot of companies building drone software. What we really honed in on is, what is the critical piece of this whole system that's really important? And what we found is, the core technology that does the 3D reconstruction was a core thing that we decided we must own. I was able to hire a computer vision team to actually build our own proprietary 3D reconstruction engine and do it in a way that we made it portable. We can run it on embedded systems with lower power, lower resource capabilities. And that allowed us to put everything onto edge compute devices. So it didn't require a large workstation or systems in the cloud to process. And we built purpose-built hardware around that software that we could use in the field. So building ruggedized base stations that ran our computer vision software that also acted as a high-precision base station for the drones. That was kind of one of the key products that we built at Skycatch that really made a difference in the customers because nobody else had that. Everyone else, you had to fly the drone the same way, but then there's a dependency on getting that data to a workstation or uploading gigs of data to the cloud for processing.
So I think that's really insightful because I think a lot of people who are maybe starting up a company, the hard problem that is core, you know, if your budgets are limited or you might kind of do all the stuff around that and try to find some off the shelf solution, grab an API or some other existing kind of tool that does that. But you guys identified early on that was the core thing and you had to own it. And like really investing in that core thing, that's what really enabled you guys to get that portability you were describing and the ability to like actually leverage it. Like if you had used an off-the-shelf solution, you don't think you would have been able to get the same outcomes?
Yeah, I think it would have been a very different path. Other companies have done it very successfully, targeting different markets where there wasn't that need. But for us, because we had a focus on this tech, it opened up a lot of doors in areas that really needed the portability and the quick access to data in the field.
Yeah. So fast forward us to Agtonomy, because I just think it's so cool. Like when we talk about it, I'm like, oh, it's so awesome to just see these tractors driving around. And tell me a little bit, maybe dig into that. Like now that you're at Agtonomy, what are some of the interesting challenges you guys have faced? And what has sort of been some of the more exciting things you've been able to crack into?
Yeah, I think a common theme between Skycatch and Agtonomy is when the user interacts with these systems, they're using software that's super easy to use and super intuitive, which is making a super complex process like drones and high precision GPS and all of that stuff. You put it behind a good UX and that makes a huge difference. One of the key tech decisions at Agtonomy, and this was something that the team made right before I joined, was using Flutter to develop all of their apps. I think at the time, they also tried out React Native, but ultimately went with Flutter because it was just easier and quicker to get going. And these guys are not, you know, they're not new to programming. They're all very smart, but folks on like more on the autonomy and embedded side. So seeing that, how they're able to quickly pick up Flutter and build a working app was something that was new to me. I had never used it before. Once I came on board and started building with it, I realized that it's incredibly powerful. And I hired a team, some from previously at Skycatch and some from other places that I knew. And they all have never worked with Flutter. I brought them in. They were proficient in a matter of weeks. And that led us to building out now three apps on very different platforms, all sharing probably 70% common code base and letting us iterate and move really quickly while maintaining highly testable and reusable components.
Yeah, you mentioned the portability thing before, right? In terms of even in the Skycatch story with your 3D mapping tech and making sure that you could get on these embedded systems. And it's interesting to hear you say about the 70% code reuse. I think when people think about cross-platform or multi-platform tools, they're thinking about like single code base, multiple apps, like same app, just different platform. But Is it correct to say that you guys are basically like actually distinct multiple apps, but where you're sharing a lot of core logic?
Yep, exactly. So for us, we have a tablet app that's mainly for monitoring, controlling the fleet, playing your missions. And then we also have a web app, which is more for analytics and metrics. And we also have the actual on-vehicle dashboard itself. This is when the operator is driving manually. They have a touch screen that they can see telemetry and control the vehicle systems. They're very, very different apps. But because we use Flutter for all three, we have a shared SDK that's used across the board. We have shared widgets. We have shared data models. So all the foundational pieces is the same. And a small group of engineers can maintain that. And then for the very specific platform things, we can build different things by composing these elements together, and it just works.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys took what I think is the holy grail approach to these types of tools, which is not thinking about single code base, same app, multiple platforms, but what if we have an ecosystem of apps that are all architected, built consistently and in a common, with a bunch of common shared libraries, and set that up so that your team then becomes really portable as well. Like, are you guys able to just easily hop across all three of those applications super easily?
Yeah, totally. Nobody is assigned to working on a single app. They work across the apps. And I found that to be really, really good and allows us to be very efficient. So someone might own the SDK stack across all the apps. And if they need to make changes, that's automatically available for all the other platforms.
And if I'm correct, the one on the tractor, that's not like an iOS iPad or something. What operating system is that running?
So for that one, it's an embedded Linux system. So that one also is Flutter, and it just boots right into a Flutter application when the system boots. It looks and feels exactly the same as our other apps, but you just never know what's underneath it.
Yeah, never know what's underneath it. I feel like that's the new marketing campaign for Flutter right there. Well done. No, I think because one of the things I think we face when we look at some of these really transformative tools is you base your perception of it on prior mental models. And you might look at a thing like React Native, or you might look at some of these other tools. And I think what you guys are doing that I've always been like, that's really exciting about it, is pushing it into these boundaries. No, this is truly multi-platform. This is, we're using Linux on a ruggedized device on a tractor. We're not just talking about iOS and Android apps in your pocket. And would that have been a lot more difficult for you guys as a team, staffing, resourcing, hiring, if you had to hire, did it some other way?
Absolutely. I think we would have needed a lot more engineers to actually build out everything that we have built out. And we would have to hire very specialized resources that are experts in that respective platform and language, which meant it would be much slower to build an app, and we couldn't move people around to work on other parts of the system when there's needs.
Yeah, that's great. And so it sounds like in both your experiences that you described, defining that 3D core software and making a choice like Flutter, I'm sure there were like many, many, many other important technical decisions along the way, but it sounds like one of the things that you've prioritized in your roles is like making these like really important, high leverage strategic technology choices, right? Choosing where to invest and what to invest in to give your team the flexibility, portability is a word we've said a couple of times, and sort of scalability to really be as productive as possible. How do you like make those decisions? I mean, I guess to some extent, the Flutter decision maybe predated you, but even still, as you consider down that path and making some of those choices, or when you're observing your teams making decisions around priority or decisions around like critical technology choices, how do you as a team make those effectively?
I think you have to take a step back and really look at what are the things that you will build or you will need, and really take that into consideration when you're architecting your apps. We're actually going through a pretty big refactor to bring a bunch of things up to speed. There were some tech debt that caused certain apps to lag behind, but being on Flutter, we were able to build something new and port it over to the new apps or a different app with pretty minimal effort. And now they're all pretty much identical underneath. I think the Flutter ecosystem is moving really quickly, and we're always finding new packages and new tools that will help us accelerate our development. So it still feels relatively young in terms of Flutter itself. I know it's been around for almost 10 years now, but it's still growing. I see a lot of excitement around Flutter. I was actually just at a Flutter meetup last night and met some of the Google team there that works on the Flutter frameworks. And they're all super excited, and just seeing them talk about how the adoption of Flutter is really growing and accelerating all over the world is just a really good signal that we've made the right choice.
Well, I tend to agree with you for obvious reasons. And I think it's, you know, the thing about Flutter is, it's a high leverage tool. It's like what I like to say about it. It's like all the things you were describing about the impacts on your team. And there's a lot of things that you can do. And you've made choices elsewhere in your technology stack throughout all of your career experiences where it's like creating these leverage points for your team where you can kind of like unlock additional productivity. And Flutter, because you can, like, you know, anybody can work on any of these apps, and the complexity in your organization, if each one of those apps is a different team, staff differently, different product manager, right? Different engineers, and you have to coordinate them and talk through all the requirements. And really, like, at the end of the day, the user experience, like you said, you want to make the UI really, it's super critical you get that. But still, like, there's a lot of work being done, I would think, on the autonomous side, like actually making the tractor actually be autonomous. And in a way, that's like the killer feature. But you need this front end, and you don't want the front end development to get in the way of that other stuff or be this extra strain and burden on the business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for a lot of these industries, the UX is so important. Not to make light of the autonomy side, that is an extremely hard problem and takes a lot of work to get right. But what I found is no matter how good the underlying tech is, if you present the user that's using this as their livelihood and it something breaks or doesn't work or costs them an extra hour to figure out how to do something, they're just going to throw it away and never use it again. You have to make it easy to use. And that first impression of how well that app works is so important. These jobs, they, you know, every second counts. They can't spend time figuring out an app or if it's buggy or, you know, it's unintuitive. That's the most critical piece.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. These industries you're in, I find it fascinating because you don't really come across too many people that have built tech drones for mining, right? Or even ag tech. I mean, it's out there. It's a big sector, but you know, so many engineers gravitate towards other types of things, whether it's e-commerce or online tools or whatever. It's interesting to me that you've focused on these connections, and there's something about even those industries that there's some stigma to mining and even agriculture, you know, pesticides and things. Like, how did you get into those places, and how did you, like, what's your perspective on getting into these types of industries that maybe an engineer out there might not be prioritizing when they're thinking about their career?
Yeah. In terms of at Skycatch, when I joined, I didn't know anything about construction or mining. Mining, I think, to the outside perspective, it's like, oh, it's dirty, it's hard work, there's toxic chemicals. You hear about, you know, tailings dam collapses or failures that just pour toxic sludge down a valley and destroy the environment. That's absolutely true. There's always these very negative aspects about these industries, but also everything depends on it. This is the core resources that pretty much everything, the computers, the houses that we're, and for ag, it's the food that we eat every day. It's an extremely important. It's something that will never go away. And I think it's very important to have people working on improving these processes. How do we make mining safer? How do we make the environmental impact minimized by monitoring things more carefully and preventing these catastrophic failures? For ag, how do we minimize the use of chemicals in farming by using more intelligent systems that can do things mechanically instead of chemically?
Very, very cool. There's definitely like a really interesting connection, right? Mining and agriculture, because there's like supply chain that is so crucial to us living our everyday lives. You know, we're using devices right now, or whether we're on the other end of this, listening to it in our car or on our AirPods that had materials that came out of those mines. And similarly, like with food or the wine we drink or whatever that comes out of agriculture. And I just think it's really interesting, those threads of like building tech that helps to improve safety, quality, efficiency, all those things to build us a better world. I think that's super cool. What like kind of parting thoughts, or what, when you meet an engineer out there or a team that's starting out and they're going to build some complicated system, right? What advice do you have for those people that they could follow to be more successful or optimize their chances of finding success with the tools they're building?
I think the first thing is find what you truly love doing. And for me, what really unlocked that was drones. When I realized I had this passion for building software, hardware together into a system. And then once you find that, then I think is to find how can you use your passion and skills to work on something that makes a big impact, a positive impact on the world. And then if you can do these two things, then I think whatever you're doing, you're going to find fulfillment and happiness every day doing it. I think that's really critical. I know a lot of people who work for large tech that really hate their jobs, but they get paid a lot of money to do it, so they stick with it. But I much rather know that what I'm working on is helping people on the other end who's using my product, and hearing people visiting the customers, hearing them say how great this is and how much it's improved their lives. That's so important and is all that I really need.
Do you think that helps you write better code or make better tech decisions? I'm curious. It gets to culture, right? As well. I mean, it's not only your personal passion, but all the things you're saying, like, are you happy? Are you fulfilled? Are you motivated? All those things. I think maybe some of the reason those other people are not happy in a big tech job is maybe they're not aligned with what they're doing. They're not excited about the product, but also sometimes cultures can be not great and it's not a fun environment or it's too much bureaucracy or whatever. I'm just curious if you think that drives better results, or anecdotally, if you've seen better outcomes on teams where you have that enthusiasm and passion.
I think so. I think when you're passionate about the product you're working on and you care about the users of the product, then you get into that customer mindset of always thinking about how do you make this better for the end user. And I think that definitely drives better products because you're constantly thinking about, okay, when you understand what it takes to do their day-to-day work, you think about during their day when they're doing this, what is the pain point? How can I make this process better and smoother? So maybe it doesn't help me make better code, but it helps me come up with better products. And ultimately, that's what's important for the users.
Well, and it maybe drives you to go visit that mine. It's cold,
yeah.
It's uncomfortable, it's far away. But if you're passionate and really interested in solving these problems, you're maybe as a team more likely to go out there and really experience it and seek to truly understand what the users are looking for. We had Patricia Roller on here as an earlier podcast, and she talked a lot about the importance of customer insights, like how customer insights have to drive a lot of your decision making. And if you don't care, you're not going to fight as hard to find those insights, right?
Exactly.
Well, this is great. I don't know if you have any other parting thoughts. I've covered a lot of ground here. I think just incredible experience and background. And I think just an area and a space where I think it's novel and super interesting. I mean, the whole autonomous space started with Waymo, but getting into like where autonomy is going, I think people see, you hear about, you know, full self-driving Tesla, and you maybe hear about things like Waymo, but the idea that there's autonomous drones out mapping mines is extremely cool. And thank you for sharing your stories today and really appreciate you helping us out.
Yeah, absolutely. Been a pleasure chatting with you.
Where can people find out more about Eggtonomy if you guys are hiring, or if somebody out there happens to be looking for autonomous solutions for their tractors?
Yep, we're hiring across the board on all the engineering teams, eggtonomy.com.
All right, awesome. Well, thanks so much, David. Can't thank you enough.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on Build to Succeed, a Very Good Ventures podcast. We hope you enjoy exploring the experiences and insights of leaders that have built successful digital products. Please take a moment to leave us a review, and don't forget to subscribe to get our latest episodes. Thanks again, and see you next time.